people, it's Furia fans. Furia fans, understandably, lost their shit when you implied that the team wouldn't do very well this year or wouldn't win as much, etc. Now, to be fair, they also... There's one thing that does annoy me, mate. They're the ones who simultaneously tell me, like, yeah, but you can't go on about the major. Like, Molodoy's still inexperienced. It's like, no, no, you're the one who told me they'd win the major. No, no, I didn't say they would. Like, don't tell me that. Like, you're the guys who told me that because they won those trophies, they were the number one team and they were going to win the major. In fact, everyone I know said, you've got the East side of the bracket. You're definitely going to be in the final. The question was just, will it be you versus Vitality, Spirit or Falcons? That was the whole discussion. So the idea now, all of a sudden, it was like fine to lose to Na'Vi. Anyway, the point is, people already had gotten to that level. So if you ever want a little marker, like a barometer for where is Brazilian CS at, they don't go nuts like this until the team's really good. In fact, if anyone saw the last few years, they were pretty chill. After the fucking Rio Major, they calmed right down and you'd never known there was this crazy fan beside. But you could see the moment, as soon as they won like an IM or something, like... straight to the door. So obviously they were never going to be take kindly to the idea they were not going to be that good. But Pimp, I've got to say, mate, I said on the last one, okay, they look dodgy online, but whatever, it's online and it was foot anyway. Mate, if you look at this LAN, what's funny is even though they gave Paravision a really cross semi-final, if you watched that game, like Furia was fucking bad in this game. Like what they did is they had more experienced players, so they won like clutches, they won late round scenarios. But if you actually think about it, right, on paper, this is supposed to be one of the best firepower teams in Counter-Strike. Most of them didn't turn up. Like fucking Molodoy actually had another really bad LAN series, unfortunately. So, okay, I'll give you a moment. What do you think? Is this when you were saying they were going to be bad? I'm guessing you didn't mean this bad. What do you think of the initial outing?
Yeah, I don't think I ever said they were going to be bad. I think I said they weren't going to be as good as we saw, you know, at the end of last season. I think, you know, for them to stabilize around being the third, fourth, fifth best would be where I would put them. And I think that's exactly the level they showed at Blast, maybe even a little bit worse. And I think my main argument and the main reason why I think so is that as much as I like what they did, you know, in the last 3 months last year, I do think that I think Yuri overperformed. You know, I think he performed better than what I would expect him to do in 25. I think Yekinda performed way better than what I would expect him to do in 26. And I think, you know, certain elements of that team just, it all came together and they kind of over-delivered in a sense. Whereas I feel like here in 26, it's going to go back to normal. It's going to go back to Yuri being good, but not great. It's going to go back to Yekinda being influential, but not overpowered as he was in certain scenarios. And I also do think the whole calling would fall on a rifle. Like it is a limitation to some degree. They kind of masked up for it, you know, and maybe the fact that Yekinda, Yuri, Quezerado, Molodoy came out of nowhere and exploded on the server, like that kind of masked for the fact that there's still a conversation to be had whether or not Fallen is for a full season going to be reliable with a rifle as an in-game leader. I'm not quite sure that's the case either. So I have question marks attached to a lot of the players and a lot of the, I guess, different outputs that some of them are coming with. And I think I saw that, you know, if not confirmed, then at least I saw early signs of that. You know, I saw a Fallen, you know, that is to a degree a bit of a liability with the rifle in certain of his positions on the CT side. I saw a Yuri that didn't perform as well. I saw a Yekinda that didn't perform as well. As you said, against Paravision, one thing is losing to them in the semifinal, and I'm sure we'll talk about Paravision from Blast. That was a big surprise, but they lost 2-0. Like, they didn't win a map, first and foremost. Also, their quarterfinal versus Heroic, they lost a map 13-3, Mirage, where they were nowhere to be found whatsoever. And then I know they bounced back and they looked pretty good on second map, looked okay on Nuke as well, but they even allowed Heroic back in that game. And that was a Heroic playing with a fucking stand-in that was a rifling AWP player. Like, there's no excuse if you're Furia losing a map to Heroic, regardless of you having a poor showing. And then, as you said, as we spoke about last time, the online game against Foot, that was also a bit shaky. So I didn't really see anything from Furia that gave me any confidence that they're going to be better than third, fifth, or fourth, as I predicted. So I think I saw a lot of early signs on what I kind of fear is going to be the case for Furia. Could be the turn it around for Krakow, could be their winner, then we'll have to have another conversation. But for now, I feel like they're on track to be maybe the fourth best, fifth best team in the world, which is by no means bad. That's okay if you're Furia. It's just not the world domination team that all the Brazilians seems to be there. They're going to be.
No, this is where people just do this thing in CS where it's like their brain resets every 3 months and they forget everything that happened before. Like, remember, this roster wasn't made like in the player brick going into season 2. They'd already had it for a few months before in season 1 and it just looked like, okay, look, it's an improvement over the all-Brazilian lineup. But actually, if you remember, there's a reason why a lot of people were not only skeptical when it was formed, but even like after the first few tournaments, they were like, does this make sense? Like, why is Yekindara in this team? And also, what's the... Remember, people will forget this detail, bro. One of the angles that was sold on Yekindara being in the team was that he's there to translate for Molodoy. That was a real thing people said. Like, the joke is, with how Yekindara played in the second season, you'd never even bring that up. It's like, he's here because look at him. He's like an impact player who's aggressive rifler. He's back. Like, that was what everyone was saying before the when they made the major playoffs. Even like, wow, he's back. Look, Team Liquid should regret it. You know, your time on Team Liquid does not count and all that. For all the fucking memes came out as usual because, as we learned with the Zwei Paravision thing we'll talk about in a minute, you can't ever just have a roster move that makes sense for both parties. Someone must be like the spurned girlfriend in the fucking drama where it's like, oh, she was the one that was right and this other guy was the bastard and he lost. Oh, there's justice. It's like some weird fucking soap opera angle we have to have. Because I actually think you've nailed it, mate. If you set the expectations of like somewhere between the two positions. So they started with like, is this roster going to work? At the top, they were winning and beating Vitality and winning all the time. If you go somewhere in between and you say basically, they'll be like fourth or fifth, I'd say, I'll be kinder and say third or fourth, but even so, similar range. What you're basically saying is they'll have a chance to win tournaments. They'll still be in the mix. They'll still make playoffs a whole bunch of the times. But I even think that's fair, mate, because one thing that I know got me hated on, but it's just what I saw when I watched the second season, was they never ever actually were some insanely dominant team, as in, they didn't do the like Vitality Falcons shit at times last year where you just smash everyone 13-3. This was the team that would win all the close games and they would actually clutch you out. And sometimes even your team would play well in a final and semi, but they would just get the extra win, get something on. As you're saying, if you look at like the firepower numbers were impossible, mate. Like no one could maintain that. You'd be one of the greatest teams of all time if you did that. So I don't think there's any shame whatsoever in being like, as I just said here, by the way, essentially with almost none of your star players going off, you almost beat the team that won the fucking tournament. Like you would have been in the final. I actually think if you'd have been in the final, you probably would have beat Falcons. Who even knows at this point in time? So it's not even a diss, but I do think people unfortunately have just gone... What people do, it's a traditional fan mistake, is when you look at how a team plays and track it over a long period of time, they just look at the top part of the curve, the absolute ceiling, and yeah, they just go, that's the normal. And it's like, no way. I mean, by the way, if we do that with, I'll take a more extreme example. If we do that with teams like G2, we'd have to make these teams insanely overrated. Like, there's a reason why Na'Vi, well, I'm only going to take the moment of Na'Vi at the major and pretend none of the rest of the second season counted. That'd be whack, wouldn't it? So I know what you mean. I think they'll course correct at Krakow and they'll be like a top team. They'll certainly be a playoff team and they'll mix it up and people like Molodoy will have good games again. Obviously, they won't play that bad. So again, we're not going fully like this is the new Fury. I actually do think that was an underperformance at that LAN. But I also think if you look at the LAN in general, here's what's very positive for them. Mate, what saves their narrative is almost everyone looked kind of crap. Like if anything, Falcons are the only one that didn't. And if anything, didn't have the excuse, they don't have the coach, they don't even have a real player. Like they're all fucking around. Almost everyone looked actually a bit under the weather, except for Paravision, basically. So I don't hold this one against them too much. But I do think you have to acknowledge something has happened since about a month and a half ago or something. Like the last month and a half to 2 months of Fury has looked worse.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like it adds pressure. I think that was my main takeaway from pretty much anything that happened at Blast. You know, if anything, obviously the Paravision story is one thing, we'll get into that. But for most of the good teams, as you said, none of them look great. You know, Vitality didn't look great, Fury didn't look great, Spirit obviously were struggling, FaZe and Na'Vi losing the online games, not even getting to the playoff, Liquid look shaky. I think the main takeaway is that it just adds pressure on all of them to do better at Krakow. And that's kind of what I liked about it, you know, in a sense that if you're Fury and now the last two tournaments they played was a bit of a failure, dare I say it, at the major, you know, losing in that quarterfinal versus Na'Vi was no bueno. And then losing to Paravision in a semifinal at Blast. So that's, again, if you do the fan narrative that all the reason that everyone thinks that Fury is going to win everything and be the best team in the world is because you remember the last 3 months.
Yeah.
Well, the last 2 months, they failed in a quarterfinal, they failed in a semifinal. So now is that the expectation we're setting? So I think it puts pressure on Fury to do well at Krakow, because if we're sitting here in a week and a half and we're discussing Fury didn't even make the playoff at Krakow, or if they lost in another quarterfinal, like now we're talking a team that, you know, we're generous if we're talking at them being the third, fourth or fifth best team in the world, right? So I think it's a fine line right now for a lot of the teams. The only teams that are deemed to be safe in that conversation, to be completely honest, is Vitality and Falcons in that regard. Because Falcons, they will always get there. Falcons will be in the semifinals or in the finals, and then they find a way to fucking lose it. But again, a conversation for another time. And the same goes for Vitality, whereas I feel Furia... have shown they can win trophies. They have that winning mentality, as you said as well, not in this dominant fashion where they're destroying their opponents or they're leaving no room for doubt, but they had that grit, you know, and ability to edge it out, you know, as we saw last year. So I think, if anything, it just adds a bit of pressure on Furia and Krakow, and I'm curious to see how they can handle it. But I still have my questions. I still think Jure is a fine player. I'm not calling anyone to be cut. I'm just saying that, as you said as well, like, not everyone can fucking win every time. And I don't see Furia, when I look at the five players, as the team that should be winning more often than not. You know, I think there's other teams higher in the pecking order. And that's not a diss against Furia. That's just me trying to be realistic instead of being a fan of God knows what team.
I would also, this is one of those teams where I would really love to know, like, if I could get like a temperature check from the other teams in the scene at the top end of what they're like in scrims or something. Because one thing that makes me a bit suspicious is this.
Well, I'll tell you, like, Heroic during the Blast draft show said that in practice, they've been playing up with them. Like, it's been 50-50 almost. So, like, if Heroic consistently in practice is doing well against Furia, sure thing, it could be, you know, this team is set up very well against Furia and they play well against them. But again, if a Heroic team with a stand-in, even without a stand-in, I don't even care, is playing up to Furia and even said, I think they said they beat them a couple of times in practice as well, to me, that's a sign that practice maybe is not going that well for Furia. You shouldn't be struggling against Heroic regardless of what you're doing in practice.
No, especially because, if people don't know, Heroic's just using that player, Youngster, who used to be the rifler, who's just all right anyway as a rifler. He's pretty bad as an AWP, man. I don't even know what the fuck they did. That's some bad GMing, considering everyone congratulates them every time they sell players. I always say this, and do what with the money? Just put it in the fucking bank. You're supposed to spend the money on your players and then get a fucking good team. Like, we're here to actually accomplish results in CS. Like, what are we even doing at this point? So anyway, the one thing I would say is this. The reason I speculated, like, maybe they're not that good in practices, bro, what never made any sense to me is, even before this little fall off from the major, you can go back and the whole second season, Fallen, even when they were actually on top, was communicating in all of his interviews. He does it in every single one, bro. The idea of, like, maybe I just retire soon, not even like, yeah, you know, when it all ends, or, you know, in a year or two. He keeps making it sound like I'm pretty sweet. It implies to me like he doesn't actually think this is going to be like an all-time world beater roster that's going to win. Because there's the other thing, for me, Fallen's in the same spot as a Carrigan. It's like, you're here to just try and win hopefully some more trophies on the way out the door, so you can make your legacy more legendary. So I don't think you would ever leave for me, you leave once you don't think this team will win anymore, or even better, as you're saying, it's even implied to me as well, because he is now not even on the AWP, so his individual impact is less, and he's essentially just a pure caller largely, except those odd weird clutches he manages to win still, fair play, even with that mad one against fucking Belchinok, where I have no idea why he didn't come and try and defuse, but whatever, he mind controls people because he's a veteran, fair play, that is actually a thing a lot of veterans could do. What I would say is this, it almost implies like he even thinks they might be better if they get a different IGL later. So actually, the messages coming out of their camp are actually kind of different to what their fans are saying. Their fans are making them sound like it's going to be the fucking Vifuria era or something.
Yeah. That's. I don't see that. I don't see that being the case at all. I agree with you as well. I think the way Fallen communicated last year, I think we spoke about it in one of the episodes as well. You know, I kind of had a feeling that if they won the major in Budapest, I think he would have retired after.
Yeah, I think so.
Gone out on a high. I think he was setting that story up. He obviously wanted to win more trophies, as you said. But if you're Fallen and you can go out winning a major, that would be a perfect way to end your career. And, you know, the thing with Fallen is as well, many people forget, like, he is one of those players who's been exceptionally good at building a brand outside of, you know, yes, him playing on the server. Has a lot of businesses, you know, his own prohibitive company in Brazil. And I'm sure he makes like significantly more money, on all other stuff than actually playing Counter-Strike. So he's not doing it for the money. He's not doing it for the prize pool. He's not doing it for the stickers or whatever. Like, he's doing it because he wants, as you said, more trophies to his legacy. So if you can go out and you can win a major more, and then that will be the end of your legacy, that'll be the end of your career, that will have been perfect. And I think that's why, again, without knowing, but I think that's why he was open to even talking about the fact that maybe he would retire, you know, this season and they would find a new one. But he also did say that until he thinks that there's someone who can do the job better than him, that they can get inside Furia, he won't retire. And whether you want to put a lot of stock into that, I'm not quite sure. I don't know the Brazilian scene that well. I mean, they should be willing, I guess, to also, you know, pick apart a non-Brazilian in-game leader as they speak English now. So I feel like there's a lot of people on the market that you could, in all fairness to Fallen, that you could replace him with that would be similar, you know, or as good. Maybe even, like, imagine a freaking Carrigan, if he has another year in him, right? Imagine Carrigan going to Furia or something crazy like that. So I think there's a world as well where if Furia is just going to be, you know, third best, fourth best, fifth best, They maybe win one trophy along the way, but they don't win Cologne. They don't win Krakow. I think there's a world where by summertime, then maybe that is the shuffle period. Or that's the transfer season where Furia is calling it a quits with Fallen, and he maybe moves into a coaching role or something else within Furia. So as I said many times, that I know the Brazilians are, they don't want to hear it because they're very emotional. And fair enough, you're a fan and you're supposed to be emotional. I think we should just enjoy it. You know, enjoy it as long as he's around, because I think it's on borrowed time, and that's at least the I guess that's the. That's the way I look at it, you know. I'm a fan of the story Fallen. I'm a fan of what he's been able to do. I'm a fan of Furia when they play well, but I don't really care that much, you know. I'm not a Brazilian diehard fan. I don't have to support them when they're not doing well. I don't have to sugarcoat them when they're not performing well. That's sort of like my job, to be as I guess nuanced in that way. So enjoy him for as long as he's around, because I don't think it will be long, to be completely honest. And if anything, I would love to see Fallen in a different role within esports, because he has a lot to offer, whether that's on the server or as a businessman or as a desk talent or whatnot. You know, he could do basically whatever he wants to do.
And also, even though they were winning like late round scenarios, I have to say I wasn't particularly impressed actually with the call in against Paravision. Like, I think that's one thing I'll give to Paravision. We can just talk about them now if you want. You can absolutely listen. I've always thought Jamie individually is a bit overrated. By the way, in CS2, he is just a worse AWPer. It's not even just the stats thing and the HLTV. He's just a worse AWPer, mate. Like, he just hits the basic shots. He doesn't do anything crazy. But I'll tell you what, he actually did call circles around some of these fucking IGLs at this LAN, mate. Yeah. I mean, even like CT rotations were banging. It was just, I got a great feel for the game. So if we talk a bit about Paravision, because I think that is tips off the Fallen angle. I mean, as you say, you've lost to Na'Vi and Paravision now. Like, one thing about these squads is these are squads that have good IGLs, in theory, like they've good system as to how they play, etc. And Furious had their issues, right? If you look at the Paravision angle, Pimp, obviously now they get crazy VRS points off this. They get right up the HLTV rankings. People are now going to be all buying into the stock now where they were the believers before. How much of a believer is Pimp? Like, what from this LAN can you replicate? Can you take away? What do you think?
They set a new baseline for themselves. But I even spoke to Maui about it, you know, after the grand final. It was a sick win, and it's a sick trophy for Paravision to win. But I even said it, you know, I think the players should enjoy it as much as possible, because there's a world where none of those players are ever going to be in a grand final of a tier 1 event again. I don't see Paravision all of a sudden transition into becoming a top 3 team in the world consistently. I see Paravision now as a team that has the ability, when the other teams are not at their best, they are good enough to make the upsets win. They are good enough to run around, you know, and play circles. James and did call a fantastic tournament, but they also play in a very transparent way, I feel, in the sense that their T-sides is a lot about hammering the same bomb site over and over and over again. You know, in both the quarterfinal, semifinal, and final, it was like almost like they found one weakness in each team, and then they just used that against them. And that's something you can do to create an upset win at a tournament like yes. The Blast Bounty. You can't do it to win Krakow. You can't do it to win a major. Like, it's not going to work like that. Even what we saw in Budapest as well, I think that was Maui who brought it up. Like, once we got to stage 3, they were figured out, you know. People started to look at them. They started to prepare for them. They started to take them serious. And that's when they got figured out, where, you know, playing Ancient and going to the B-bomb side 11 rounds in a row on the T-side, all of a sudden, funnily enough, didn't work out because people were prepared for it. So as much as I think it was impressive, and I think the team has potential to obviously develop. There's some of the players within the team that I think are great and only will get better despite their age. But I don't see Paravision, you know, becoming a top 3 or top 4 team consistently. Like, as I even said, like for Krakow, you know, the expectation for me in Krakow for Paravision is that on a good day, they make the playoff, lose in a quarterfinal. And if not, maybe they get close to make the playoff. But I don't see them, you know, higher up in the pecking order than the Vitalities, the Furious, the Falcons, even Mouse for that matter as well, as of right now. So I don't know. Like, if the question is, do I believe they'll win another trophy? Then no, I don't. I think the odds are they won't. Do I believe they'll make another playoff during one of the tournaments that they participate in? Sure. Do I think that they will be a team that sets a baseline where we have to consider them for the playoff from tournament to tournament? Potentially. Depends on how well they're able to replicate that kind of performance. But there's also players within that team where I feel like they're not good enough to be performing at that level consistently enough. They're simply not ready. Like, whenever I watch him, Noda is a great example. He, by many, and I think you as well, like, could have been the MVP of Blast. I think when I watch his gameplay, when I watch the way he's playing on certain maps, like, he's also the he's also the player most likely to make a lot of mistakes. Like he does massive fuck ups in certain rounds where he's clearly overpeaking or clearly getting ahead of himself and clearly making round deciding mistakes that's, you know, this tournament weren't capitalized on by some of the better teams. But if he continues to do that, then he will be exploited. And that's a player we want to put in as an MVP candidate for them. That's a player who played well in his first game here in Krakow as well. So there's room for improvements in a lot of these players. And given my experience as well and having watched, you know, a team come out of nowhere, it takes time before those mistakes will be ironed out. And especially now where everyone is looking at Paravision as a serious contender, They will rammer that. You know, if you're Apex, if you're Vitality, you see Noda, example, CT side on Inferno, he's struggling massively on Banana. He's struggling massively over peaking and putting himself in one and done positions. You're just going to hammer down on that and you're going to destroy that CT side by that. And I think that's a real issue they have to go through. And that's why I don't think they'll win any trophies anytime soon, especially not at the big tournaments.
No, I have to say, even though I am, as a result, look, if I see three results like that, I'm going to give you some credit. I'm going to say you did beat some of the best teams. Problem is, though, that credit doesn't go all the way to the top of the world. Like, for me, I think, actually, if you come back and watch this episode, timestamp it, then come back in 3 months, my guess would be Paravision is the 8th or 9th best team in CS. I looked at all the other squads. Yeah. Who do I think is good? I look even at, obviously, I'm going to give people like Spirit the chance to get better and improve past them, etc. But I look at all the other squads. People like Na'Vi should be better, maybe FaZe Clan because they have the like arena buff. It's I look at the teams. This is about 8th or 9th. That seems reasonable. And by the way, again, if we set the expectations reasonably, that's way better than I thought last year. I did think they get exposed at the end of the major.
They were 25th a month ago, you know. So if you say 8 or 9th, that's great.
And also, part of it is like, how prepared are teams? Can teams play against that gimmicky GM style? Do people know what to do against those calls, etc.? The problem is that doesn't work consistently against the top teams. Like, it'll work sometimes. So to me, I just see them as like a gatekeeper for playoffs. I have to say, the other thing as well, and I predict we will see it right now with Krakow. Yeah, I think they'll make it into the main event. And then what will happen is, you will realise, if you are a fan of Paravision, there's another detail about Blast Bounty, which is why people are saying it wasn't a big event. Not only did it have online groups, groups, it's like a selection system. It wasn't a bracket either, which is why it's complicated. It's online selection system. But when they were at the LAN, remember, the LAN was basically where Pro League used to be. It was like a small place in Malta, which doesn't have a, like, if anyone saw when they would cut to the crowd, they would do that thing with a really zoomed in angle because it's like 10 people or something mental like that. And like, that'll just be like your family members, your friends, coaching staff, you know, people who work the event. Like, that's not a real crowd. Here's the difference. Would you have really played with big balls against Falcons of Fury if you were on stage in Krakow or Cologne or at the major? That's the problem. Right now, we have no answer to that question. And I'm sorry, when I have no answer and you have 4 inexperienced players, I actually have to just go, then my actual assumption is no, you wouldn't do it. If you do it, then great, I'll go, I was wrong. Well, you're actually the rare example of what you call the exception that makes the rule, that you won't succeed early on. Because I agree. The other problem is this. Another reason I think some of us were so horny that Nota had to be the MVP is because that final was his life series. Like, I don't know if he'll ever play that well again in his whole life. Like, every shot I said just goes to the fucking head, mate. Even when he would spray, it would just go to the head. It was like, he's not Donk. He's not even close. And I agree with you as well. Part of the reason it made him insane in that final is because this motherfucker doesn't mind pushing or peeking anyone. And he was just hitting everything. Problem is, you do that in a normal game against, by the way, forget even like a top team. Do that against like a Na'Vi in a LAN in a playoff game. They'll just fucking punish you all day long, mate. You'll be the one that gets exploited, like, in the same way as you were, like, actually making them in the game. Because also, another thing people do forget about Paravision is, you know that stat of, like, they only lost one map to Spirit? Here's the irony. The Spirit series was the most convincing. The Furia one, they easily could have lost or gone 3 maps. Just, hey, fair enough, they pulled it out. The final, every single game, quite literally, they could have lost. Fair enough, they didn't. They won them. I'll give them props for that. Well done. But that's with Monacy shit in the bed, Nico up and down, the new clones guy by the time he got to the final was just literally like a fucking dead body, dead man walking. He could barely do anything, understandably. You can't expect him to have got 3 series in a fucking row where he carries, you know, like, and unfortunately, it's another one of those ones where it sounds like we're just hating them. We're not being realistic. We're actually analysing this team, and I do think they've got issues. Like, you nailed it, mate. You just look at the players they've got. Anyone who really is on that train of like, I guess Sway was right and Spirit was wrong, right? Spoiler, at the end of the season, Spirit will have had a way better season than Paravision. So by your logic, he'll be wrong then. He won't. It actually made, what's mad about that move is it made sense for both parties. He clearly couldn't in Spirit get the roles he wanted, but he wasn't good enough in the other roles. So you remove him. He got his chance to have some experience in spirit. Now he gets to go to Paravision and be one of the better players in their team and be one of the best. But the problem is, I look at people like, I'm even a fan of the Zalo guy. He's very up and down, mate. You never know what you're going to get from him on a map. Like, they don't have stars in the same way. So I also don't blame James for it. Like, he doesn't have fucking superstar players. If he had Donk and he had shit, yeah, maybe I'd judge him differently. He doesn't. So if you look at who he's working with, I could totally see them just being like a tricky team to play in group stages and definitely not the one you want to play for the playoff spot. But if they get to that arena, I have to see it done. Let me see you go on that stage and play these big balls rounds, you know.
If anything, I think that should be the goal for them, you know, to establish themselves as a top 10 team. And as you said, like, they've gotten a great head start now because I think they moved up to number 4 on VIS or something like that. So technically, as of right now, they'll enter stage 3 at the major in Cologne, which is crazy. But even if they do stage 1 or stage 2, just establish yourself as a top 10 team within Europe. That's more than fine. Because I also do think that the biggest strength of that team is actually acquiring better players down the line. If you are a CIS team right now and you're not Spirit, you know, okay, Spirit are, it's hard to upgrade within Team Spirit, right? They can't take them all. So who's the next team you want to join if you're in the CS region right now? I told you what, it's not BC game, so that's going to be Paravision. So if you establish yourself as a team that's attractive to the CS region, which I consider to be the best region right now in terms of producing talents and players, then who's to say that you can't do another upgrade on your lineup at some point and get even better, you know, or acquire one of the bigger players that maybe gets left out of Spirit or what do I know, you know? So I think in that sense, it's more... For me, it's a long-term project for Paravision. I said coming into the season, that was the very first thing I said during the Blast Desk, that I think the team to watch for me is Paravision because I think they'll continue to get better. I did not expect them to obviously win the tournament at that time, and I'll be lying if I said that I saw them go into the semifinal even, but I expect them to consistently get better and better and better because it's a young squad. It's a squad with a guy like James who's really, you know, he's positioned himself to be the father figure of that team, and for some reason...
By the way, I'll give him credit. He has the buy-in. Yep. They definitely just do what he says. Like, one thing you notice in the rounds, by the way, is it's very different if he's alive and he's there. They clearly instantly, if he says go, they go, mate. They don't stop and argue. You know, they just fucking do what he says, which works.
It does, you know, and that's such a rarity to have a team where one guy has the authority in that. But that's, again, that's going to be a challenge for a different outcome for Paravision, because let's say that... I don't know, that a guy like could be Sontix or could be someone else, you know.
I'll give you some examples. Whatever. Look, obviously the problem is some of these people are in teams. How about a Flamus? That would be an interesting one. How about if any of the people, because VP, his old team, has gone to shit? What if some of them, like Jim, maybe Flit wants to play with Jim again, mate? Bring him back. That's how you resurrect the talent. I know what you mean. Since Spirit at the moment's on top and they've taken all the big names and they've got like basically everyone, you're right. Anyone else who's Russian, basically, if you want to win, this is where you go.
Exactly. And that's why they have to position themselves. And I think that's the biggest strength of Paravision. Because, again, it's so easy to be like, well, they won at Blast Bouncing. Now we expect them to go into another semifinal or playoff in Krakow or whatnot. But that's not really realistic. Again, it's when people do that and I fucking hate it. It's like, what about all the other teams then?
Exactly.
If you expect Paravision to be in the semifinal at every tournament, you also put definitions in saying that you don't think Maus or Na'Vi or some of those teams are getting in there, right? So you're telling me now that you think Paravision is a stronger and better team than Maus, Na'Vi, you name it. And if that's your opinion, that's fair enough, but you have to think it through. Like, you have to think that there's a consequence to you saying that if Paravision is in the grand final, that means someone else is not there.
By the way, you even nailed it picking those two teams, because those aren't the teams that are going to blow everyone's mind and win all their lands. But I'll tell you what, fucking hard to beat those teams in a playoff match. Like, they're going to get you in that quarterfinal, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be super fun, and I'm curious to see where Paravision are going to go. And obviously, I'm curious to see if they can replicate the performance in Krakow. And maybe we're wrong. Maybe they are just like significantly better. But again, if we're talking in terms of what do I think is going to happen, then I think they'll establish themselves, as you said, like number 8 in the world would be great. I wouldn't even be surprised if it's more like number 9, 10, 11, 12. And that's also great, you know, considering the player material, the budget, and the fact that there's 10 other teams that on paper probably should be better.
Also, even though I will always stress, I'll always give him his due in CS2, now Jim definitely doesn't call that in every round isn't like you attack on 38 seconds or something. But look, he does mix those in still to let the other team, you know, over rotate and all that sort of shit. But he'll do the rushes. And by the way, he'll definitely do like a force by and a rush sometimes too. They do still save like motherfuckers. He is the guy where if he has the AWP, he's always looking to save. My joke has always been, he's always like the guy who's AWPing like this, but it's like his shoulders turned and the second he misses, it's like, right, I'll back off. Like, like, you just, you know, like, that's not a fadeaway when he does it, mate. That's just a safer way. Like, he's just going to save at that point. So he does do that still. But here's what, here, I'll end on a positive for the Paravision thing. Bro, it couldn't have been chef's kiss a better playing bracket draw for Krakow, because at the moment the playing's just begun and Paravision and Aurora won. And I even said this when I was watching the final with Yumi. I said, bro, I'll tell you what I am going to enjoy. I want to see, and I quite literally name checked, teams like Aurora, Team Liquid, fucking, who else? Maybe even a G2. Anyone with mildly, like, dodgy calling setup and you've got any flaws in your... I want to see you play Paravision. That's what I want Paravision to do. Because I'll tell you what, Paravision used to be good. I mean, Jim, rather, back in the old VP in CSGO, they weren't ever really, like, the close to the best team. But I'll tell you what, they fucking make the other teams have to do their homework and actually really come with a game plan. You can't just turn up on some, like, Lucy, get, oh, I'm just going to run in and frack. Mate, that's going to be a nightmare. Like, I saw at this LAN even, mate, the amount of kills Jim gets that are just like, I keep holding off angle into another off angle into another off angle. But these riflers, they try and like Ferrari peek him. He just gets the easy kill on them over and over again. And I just remind myself, all these people, because he's been out of the top team, they've forgotten what it's like to play against Jim. Like, it's a very different player to play against, mate. So that's what I want. I always thought, I never enjoyed their style in VP, mate. I thought it was ass to watch. It was winding the clock all the way fucking down. Yeah. Like, yeah, get the bomb down in 0.1 seconds. Like, that might seem fun once or twice. It's not a whole game. But I'll tell you what, it did make me think, hey, if there's ever a team that has a flaw, though, you're going to get exposed. It's going to be hard for you to beat this team.
But that's kind of where I respect Jame as well, because I agree with you. Like, VP was a fucking atrocious team to watch, you know, in terms of raw entertainment value. Never really fun. And, you know, covering their games, it's like you almost always... Whenever we get our schedule, you know, you're always like looking.
It was the least popular one, I can tell you, because you know it's going to be like 3.5 hours, pimp. Especially MR15. Remember MR15, three map games. It was a nightmare, wasn't it?
It's like you mentally got to prepare to go into work.
Yeah, exactly.
Got a VP game today. Yeah. VP game today. VP, so save your energy. Because as you said, like, it's always going to take 4 hours. Anyway, you know, that's why I respect Jame even more so, I'd say, because he's well aware that he cannot play like that with four players coming in from the streets, as he said, you know, coming in from FaZe. If you try to install that kind of mentality that everything has to be run down by the clock and everything has to be moving in patterns, you know, and you have to be the most slow pokey team ever, you know, that is sort of like etching out your opponents every single round, those players would get bored to death. And I think that's an underrated aspect of why VP, like, first and foremost, that's why I respect VP for playing like that back in the day. But I also think that's why the James style has a significant flaw, because yes, it may work when you're playing official games, and yes, you as a player can definitely, when you're sitting on a big stage or you're sitting in a group stage environment at a big tournament, of course you're willing to do whatever you need to do in order to win the game. But if you're telling me, and that may be my flaw as a player, but if you're telling me that you practice like that, like if you practice like VP like that, you would suck the life out of every single organism that is playing Counter-Strike. No one is having fun playing like that. It's like looking at some of the football teams in the world as well, that plays ultra defensively, you know, that is never like really going forward, or that is okay with having 30% of possession every single game. At the end of the day, sure, that may work for a season, it may work with a certain amount of players, but if you're any good player, if you're any player with aspirations, you are going to kill yourself if you're part of that team for a longer period. And I think that's what happened to VP as well. You can only do it for that long because it's so fucking boring. So I respect James for making it work in the first place. I also respect him for acknowledging the fact that you cannot probably do that with four youngsters who are used to run around on FaZe and actually have fun playing Counter-Strike. That being said, though, like he still does play some slow T-sides, but it's in a different way, and it's mixed up now where sometimes it's slow and then all of a sudden he's going to hit the same bomb side, you know, with outer spawn calls three times in a row. So it's very, it's way less predictable, and it's probably a better fit for the player material he has to work with. And I think that deserves a bit of respect.
No, by the way, I did see some players that like VP Jim would never make, like just walk contact through like a smoke on dust two and go in the B bomb side. They would never do that. Like, he was one of those guys where I used to joke teams like that. A smoke's a brick wall. You can't go through. It's like, what can I do? There's a smoke in my way. Like, you can get countered by one PC utility.
I'll tell you exactly what that is. And that's, again, you know, another respect to Paravision. It's why they won the tournament. And it's also why I don't think they'll win the next one. They saw a clear weakness in Nucleons and Kixon playing the B-bomb side together. So, you know, we even spoke to Destin after the game. And he said, I mean, we had to test Nucleons, right? If I send Sway in to take a duel, and Sway is going to win that duel 9 out of 10 times, we're going to win on the B-bomb side 9 out of 10 sometimes. That's how simple Counter-Strike is sometimes. And the coaches, the players, the in-game leaders, they never want to say it. It's almost like, oh no, we're not trying to target a weak player. And it's almost like it's not cool enough to win in that way. But at the end of the day, if you're playing against Hooksy, or you're playing against Fallen, or you're playing against a Nucleons, or you're playing against a youngster on an AWP, if you don't try to target the weakness within the other team, it's not that you're not too cool to win. It's just that you're fucking stupid then.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you try to figure out, okay, they have a clear weakness, let's try to exploit it. Let's see if we can figure it out, you know. And if you don't even entertain that idea, because that's not cool enough, or that's bad style or whatever, like, that's not how it works. And that's, again, it's a little note for the fans out there. Just because a player is saying something doesn't mean that it's necessarily true or that's what they mean. Sure. You know? So when a coach or when a player or in-game leader says that, no, we're not targeting Zeus, you know, back in the day, and we've never targeted Hooksy, you know, we never thought about Nucleons as a stand. Like, shut the fuck up. Of course, all the players are like, if I walk into Nucleons on the B bomb side, I believe I'm going to kill him. I believe I'm going to win the round. So that's how they approach the game. That's how they think. And I respect Destin and I respect Jame for making it so clearly obvious on that Dust 2 game that they found a weakness. And, you know, up until the point where Falcons just couldn't do anything about it, why don't you just keep on using that weakness over and over and over? And that's how they won Dust 2 in that grand final.
Mate, one of the reasons why, as a Liverpool fan, unlike all the other ones that were all emotional, I actually was kind of like, flip a coin on Trent Alexander-Arnold. If he chooses to stay cool, he's an amazing offensive player and has insane passes and assists. But one of the reasons I wasn't that bothered if he wanted to leave, mate, even though I didn't know who we'd get instead, is if you've ever seen in all the big games, like this happened, Real Madrid did this to him in a fucking Champions League final. Any big game, the opposing coach would just target our right back, which was Trent Alexander-Arnold, and just put like a really sick offensive player there. And all game long, if you're a Liverpool fan, you were just like sweating like every time the ball went there, because they're gonna exploit him one-on-one and get like a through on goal, or they're gonna run around him or whatever. No, I know what you mean. That's just being a winner. Like, that actually shows that Jame really wanted to win this tournament. He isn't just playing just for funsies. Like, he was grinding him out. And I agree, like, actually, we can transfer this to the Falcons talk now. Here's what's sad if you're Nucleons. Bro, in a weird way, it would have been better for Nucleons' career if Ziwu had gone mental on that third game of the Vitality series, and Vitality had won, but we'd all have gone, well, you know, no shade on Falcons. Wow, they made it such a great game. And Nucleons, he had an awesome series. Everyone would have left that tournament going, you know what? This is only his like second LAN, and the other LAN, by the way, was an energy drink fucking silly LAN. Like, that'd probably get you on a team, mate. People would be like, you know what? Maybe like the Game of Legends of the world need to get this guy. Like, this guy's kind of good. The problem is, he had that insane life series himself against Vitality, which, to be fair, I think Nico even nailed it. Yeah, obviously on Mirage, he's going to be good. Like, every FPL player ever has been playing 1 million pod games on Mirage. And he also has the Keisuke one, which, by the way, is just code for, like, you can peek anytime you want, just do whatever you want, and just run around and shoot people, basically. That worked in the semi, Smith. That was good. In the final, not only, if you ever watched the camera go on him, did he whiff a lot of shots. He obviously was fucking nervous, mate. But I agree. They abused this guy. I mean, you have to. He's a total standing rookie. Like, the Falcons never even supposed to be in the final. That probably should have been like a Spirit or someone fading, you know. But fucking hell, like, it just made him look, it made it go too far the other way, where it made him look like he's absolute trash, whereas, like, he's about as inexperienced as you can get. I was even being polite on Twitter. I normally just say it because it's just reality. I normally call people like that nobodies, because no one knows this fucking, but if I'd have even said name Macedonian players, that wouldn't even be a top four name you'd mention, because no one knows anyone aside from Sassanito and fucking Kicksand. That's about it. So already, right, I expect him to have these problems, but bloody hell, mate. That was rough. Yeah. That was rough.
That was rough, and that was a tough one, because I agree. Like, I feel like there's many sides to it, because obviously what he did against Vitality in the semifinal was great, and as you said, like, the best thing that could have happened was them losing that game, him doing well, because maybe, as you said, maybe someone would at least keep an eye on him. Now I feel like he's going to go back to the academy team, and then he has to do some serious work within the academy team to get another spotlight on him. It's kind of to be expected, though. I think what surprises me, to be completely honest, is the lack of ambition. You know, I know that academy team is for Falcons as well. It's obviously a new project, and the whole Netosavix, you know, hiring, was it four players from within his own agency?
Sure. Or whatever,
you know, there was some controversy. There was one player that wasn't from his own agency was this guy.
That's
hilarious.
So stupid.
So he gets another chance, but I don't know what you feel about it. As far as I understood it, the reason why Kiyosuke was not showing up for the Blast Bounty was because of some Schengen days or visa related stuff.
You know, it's the same thing I always tell people. Spirit has that's like. It's not just even getting the visa. You only have a limited amount of days. You have to spend them really carefully. So unfortunately, if you're being cynical, this is the one you'd pick to skip because you need all the other tournaments, don't you?
As I understood it, you know, other tournaments, Canada planning, and if they were to make the playoff in Cologne, let's say, then
there you go.
They could run out of setting dates, you know, doing the tournament.
Bro, remember it happened to VP like a year or two ago. It might be last year, the one where they made the playoffs and everyone was going, wow, they're looking good. And then Flamers couldn't play. He had to go home. He literally just couldn't play the match. He ran out of days or something. Like that was it.
So Katowice, I think two years
I think
ago,
so, yeah.
Last year. Yeah, that's crazy. But I think that's one of the ones to protect, you know. So that makes sense. But I was sitting back with a question. I feel like it's unambitious. Like, there's no one within that academy team that is clearly good enough to make that step and replace Kyusuke. And I get why you, if you're Falcons as an organization, you want to give one of your academy players the chance.
No, I know what you mean.
As you said, like, if he does well, then maybe you can sell him off. You can bank in a bit of cash. But for my money, I would just go out and find the best possible stand-in that I could so I could win that fucking event. It was so winnable, you know. It was so winnable.
Oh, mate, let's talk about this. This is where we're going to really seem like Paravision haters. Because, bro, when I watched that final, it's a bit like I was just saying about the Fury one. Man, those maps are so close. In fact, forget even Kiyosuke for a second. They could have still won with this roster if Monacy just did anything for about half the rounds. And Nico was like, he was pretty good, but he was up and down. Like, Monacy, actually, mate, I'll tell you what, bearing in mind in the second season of last year, he was the one carrying finals they would lose in. He was actually shit in this final, mate. Like, I think there was some stat that he'd had something mad, like four op kills at some point when Jim had had, like, I don't know, 20 or something insane. Like, it was nuts how just quiet this guy was. Like, that's normally the thing I respect about him is that thing of, like, right, if the game's going bad, I'll hard carry. Like, if he'd have even given you just the most average Monacy performance ever, they'd probably win the tournament, Pimp.
Probably. I think that's a fair point, you know. So they could have done better with that. But I think just to go back to the point that I was trying to make is that I was disappointed Falcons didn't just choose a good stand-in, you know. I think you could have gone for anyone, basically. Put in a name there, right? Stone. Yeah. Let's say that you brought in him as a stand-in. We know he's out of Astralis. We know that he announced that he's ready to play again. He's looking for a team. Why don't you bring in Stone as a stand-in? You win the fucking tournament, and then everyone is happy. I get that you want to use an academy player, and I get that, you know, again, I think with the roster lock situation, I don't know if it is the Schengen days, they probably would have known far ahead of time, which means they could have set it up, you know, and they could have written in Stown as a sixth player or whatever they had to do, write him in, you know, to potentially being able to switch him out. But just have higher ambitions for yourself. I feel like if you're Falcons, you cannot miss an opportunity to win Edge Trophy. Like you are so great at getting into the goddamn grand finals and losing them. So even a blast bounty, I feel like you should do everything you can in your power.
It's a confidence builder to win that tournament. Yeah, of course.
It is, you know, and it was even, you know, imagine if they would have walked away from that grand
final. Oh, mate, I've even just realised, shit, almost no one made this point. Well, obviously, they only won the other trophy with Dexter, didn't they? So remember what every fan was saying? Zero trophies with Morrissey. You would have had one. If you'd have had any fucking top 50 player, even one that's totally with not even the right roles, you'd probably win, mate.
Yeah, that's my point. At least that's where I was like, oh.
True.
And I don't hold that up against Newcastle at all. I think he did everything he could, you know, and he's just, whether he's going to be great in 2 years from now, fuck knows, but he's not ready for it right now. You know, that's clear and obvious. And I even spoke to Mario about it in the semifinal when he actually did play well against Vitality. A lot of the kills he got was, as you said, just by pure aiming, just by pure FPL style of play. I felt like you could see that his crosshair placement was all over the place.
Yep.
The way he moved around was a little bit shaky. He just didn't seem like he was ready for the task. And again, in his defense, I think he had played 5 official games as per
ATC.
Before he got into to become a stand-in.
No shade to him at all, mate.
No, exactly. And had, you know, another crazy stat would have been, had the grand final gone 5 maps, then more than 50% of his official maps would have been in a grand final at a tier 1 event, you know.
Sure.
It's so fucking stupid. Yeah. So I think if anything, I don't know the inner workings. I don't know what were the, you know, how soon they realized, you know, the Schengen days with Kyusuke, et cetera, but the one thing I was a little bit disappointed about was the choice of stand-in. That's not against Nucleons, that's against Falcons. I think they could have gone for something better. They could have gone for a stand-in that would have made them able to win the tournament. And I even agree with you. They probably could have won without him, but that's also based on Furia, Vitality, and Spirit not playing well. Because had Spirit performed, had Furia performed,
that's
had Vitality
true.
Performed,
yeah.
then they never would have gone close to winning that tournament. So I feel like that's also a caveat to that. Whereas if you bring in, again, let's say Stown or someone else with experience that can actually play at that level, then I think it's realistic that they beat Vitality. They beat Fury, they beat Spirit in the best grand final regardless.
Now, look, obviously they didn't also have their coach in the final, which is, that's not like that's nothing. Like, by the way, shame on anyone who was not just memeing when they were like, they should just fire Sonic and have this guy with the funny t-shirt. Like, you're so whack, mate. Like, it's not a fucking kids pantomime, you idiot. It's a fucking sport. So, but, and I will also add in as well, if I had to guess, it's pure speculation. Yes, obviously Sonic couldn't coach the final, but I'd imagine he did that thing where at the end of the each night, he probably like called them up and gave them his thoughts or, you know, fucking tried to watch a game and give like the assistant coach guy some a few things to implement it. So it's probably not like 100% like they didn't have anything. But I'll tell you one area we have to discuss, because this is consistent now with Falcons the whole time. Bro, I said it myself in like a Substack piece I wrote. I described them as CS is ultimate glass cannon, because, mate, they hit like a motherfucker when they do. Even as Vitality could tell you in this fucking tournament. But the reason they're a glass cannon is, the glass cannon, mate, is their mental fortitude. Holy shit, does this team just like, I have never seen a team with such like skill just like go through the floor in terms of like their ability. And it seems to largely be pressure and psychological components. Again, really tricky things to diagnose and to deal with. So, mate, there's just something wrong with this squad. And it wasn't even like it was just the whole Nico. He was actually pretty good generally this tournament. But as a team, man, they just fall apart when things go badly.
Yeah, I think it's that, you know, enabling effect that when you've done it two or three times, then like you start to believe again. Like it's such a tough circle to break. But I also feel quite convinced that once they break it, and you know, revert it back to what I said before,
sure, yeah,
that's why they should have taken it seriously. Once you win your first trophy, I think that pressure kind of goes away, and you can let your shoulders down, and maybe that, you know, creates a new circle that is a much better circle in a sense. But I agree, like it's, I'm probably never going to stop believing Falcons will win trophies eventually. I think the way I want to describe it is that they have two great players. They have too great of a setup. They have Nico, Monesi, Kyusuke. Like, at the end of the day, it's going to click at some point.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
At some point, they're going to figure it out. They're going to win a trophy, and that's going to be just fine. But I am starting to feel like, you know, whenever they go into a grand final or semifinal, I'm like, ugh, is it going to happen again? Or is it going to be a new way of losing? Or is it going to be a new player not showing up? You know, beforehand, it was maybe Nico, you know, and in some of the bigger moments, he couldn't perform. And now all of a sudden, Monesi is having a stinker. And God knows, you know, whether Kyusuke or not is going to transform into becoming what we think he is, you know, which is a fantastic Counter-Strike player. Maybe he's going to stagnate in 2026. We don't know. But it does feel like it's a mental hurdle they have to get over. And I'm not going to sit here pretend that I know what they're supposed to do. I don't think the players themselves know what to do. I don't think Lars Rubble, you know, who's, I guess, you know, historically speaking, the greatest mental coach Counter-Strike has ever seen. You know,
yeah,
exactly. If he can't fix it, then who the fuck is supposed to fix it? So I think it's one of those where they just have to break that evil circle. And once they do, then, you know, best of luck to the rest of the teams. Because I still firmly believe that there's so much skill within that team that, again, if Tessis is your fourth best player, like if he's supposed to be your weak link, then good luck. If Kixon, you know, is supposed to be a weak link, he's even described as a fucking in-game leader. I think he was playing great, you know, in the bounty as well, and has some really good calling skills and has some really good ideas for how he wants to set up the team. I think there's so many strengths to Falcons, then the only flaw they have is, as you said, the mental resilience that just seems to be nowhere to be found. And, you know, let's see if that's going to continue to trend for 26. But I have no problem saying here that I expect them to be in a grand final in Krakow or a semi-final at the very least, because that's how good they are. Simple as.
And also, to me, the other reason why it is literally inevitable they will win a trophy is because it's like you said at the end there, mate, here's the thing. They tend to only fail in those really big moments. Like, people are doing that thing where they're taking the narratives that were like the first season last year, like before they got Monesi, and then obviously they failed that one major in Austin, right? They take those and then they ignore that, like, after that, they were pretty much a lock minimum for playoffs, if not semis. And then when they were doing well, they were making the finals. Like, if you can really get, it's actually why I think everyone in CS is fucking done with Mouse. If you could just make like seemingly every semi-final, eventually you're supposed to like have, surely someone has a life game, surely someone has, you know, surely eventually the opponent it turns up and they have a bad match, or their AWP misses too many times on one half. Like, eventually you just win a bloody event. Like, the teams that normally never win are more the ones where it's like everything has to, more like Aurora, everything has to go perfect, we make the final. For Falcons, making the final is actually your normal expectation. So surely if you get, like, I'll give you an example, if you get 10 chances at a semi-final this year, surely you're going to get to like two or three finals, if not three or four or more, and you're going to win one of them. I mean, by the way, we aren't even including. What if in the final you get to play some like ridiculous Vaz run or fucking Na'Vi makes the way there? Like, these are all beatable teams for you. Like, the real joke of it is, again, on paper, you should have lost to Vitality. That's actually like a mad underrated result at this point in time. I know you can't say it's the biggest upset ever because you do have Morrissey and Eco and you are Falcons, but the Nucleons angle is insane. Like, if you were Nucleons, by the way, that is like some wet dream material of like, you think you're going to wake up before that game ends, like, oh shit, oh fuck, you know those dreams you want to go back into, like you try and lie down again but you can never get back to the same place. I bet he couldn't even believe that was real life, mate.
Yeah, I think you're right. That was, as you said, like the best thing for him to happen in that semi-final was to play his greatest game ever and then lose, you know, in the third map. And then
we'd all be like, oh, the potential, ooh, this could be interesting. Because I know what you mean. Yeah. The actual other bummer for him is this. He's in one of the only academy teams where I think you have a literally 0% chance of ever playing for the main team. Like, at this point, you really have, your dream is you have to get loaned to another team. Like, you're never going to, almost every other top team would at least consider it. Mouse does do that. Na'Vi's shown they will bring people through. Even Bloody Spirit will. The problem is Vitality doesn't have an academy team, guys. Your team, you're never getting into anyone's spot. Like, you just can't. The joke is Tessus can't get his fucking roles in this team. You're not getting in. I'm sorry. We're not even hitting on you. You need to go and play for Heroic or something. I'm sorry. That's the reality of the world. Or OG. That's the world we live in, I'm afraid, Nucleons. That's just it, mate. But I'll tell you what. As long as we all just pretend the final didn't happen, there was some potential there. You did show some good rounds.
Yeah, it was all right. As I said, like, I think if you really dive into it and you watch his point of view, like, it was just a bit, you know, it was as I would expect the rookie to play, you know. Good aim, obviously, but cross-eye placement all over the place. His clutching ability as well, like, he was the type of clutcher that would just put him in a corner and then just back on his aim. Like, he would not make any proactive moves. Yes. He would not try to outplay the opponents. He'd just be like, okay, focus on aim, because he's obviously well aware that that's the only attribute he has to offer. So,
by the way,
in that regard, he did well.
I even have an angle for you as well, like a closing topic. With seeing how Blast went, where it really was like the warm-up event and everyone was rusty as fuck coming out of the player break, and I got the vibe people had a really long, lovely Christmas, you know what I mean? Like, it looked like people started practicing like the week before and everyone was all weird and rusty, and then the online form, the joke is FaZe and Na'Vi just got their heads bounced out in the fucking online portion. The big joke of all is, obviously this might age badly if they don't do well at Krakow, because maybe you needed the warm-up event, but you know, a bunch of the teams, Mouse, G2, a bunch of squads said like, nah, we won't play the Blast Bounty. Mate, they look smart now, because the difference is, I haven't seen them play. Technically, they've done nothing. But the difference is, if you were FaZe and Na'Vi, you wish you'd skipped it out. Like, now you just look ass, don't you? You've started the season on the worst. Like everyone was a brokey believer. Like, that's gone. Like, yeah, there's a reason we called it a miracle run. Like, it can't happen every tournament, can it? Like, what do you want?
Yeah, that's true. That's what I got out of the bounty as well. You know, if anything, it just applies more pressure on them in Krakow. You know, and I don't think that's a good thing. I think the last thing FaZe needs right now is more pressure to perform.
Absolutely.
I'll be of the opinion that if they don't do well at Krakow, then, I mean, let's be honest. We spoke about it last episode as well. You can go back and rewatch that if you want to know what we think about FaZe. But I don't think that five-man roster should have stayed together. And I don't think that five-man roster is going to be what you want FaZe to be. If anything, the one that disappointed me the most was Na'Vi. You know, Na'Vi were actually boot camping. Na'Vi talked about wanted to be ready for the first event. They were sitting at boot camp. They were talking about being ready for the bounty. They wanted to go into the playoff. They were boot camping leading into it. And then they lose the first online game. To me, that's the biggest disappointment, because if you're FaZe, you can get away with it. You know, some of those players were attending the HLTV awards, and as you said, maybe they just started practicing a couple of days ago. It was an online game, blah blah. There's a lot of, you know, excuses per se. But Na'Vi were sitting in a boot camp environment, and as far as I understood, they had been boot camping for some days leading up to that game. Nice. And then they lose right out, you know. And to me, that's disappointing. That was the biggest, you know, what the hell's going on right here for Na'Vi? Because that also just makes me feel that, okay, now there's more pressure on Na'Vi for Krakow, because again, it's a team that made the semi-final at the major. We should allow ourselves to have expectations for them heading into that tournament. So I actually, you know, now that you said it, I can't agree. You know, the top teams that skipped out, you know, are probably happy they skipped out, but only because they saw how the other top teams were shitting the bed, in a sense. And that's, you know, whether or not that's a good idea or not, I don't know. If anything, I do want to, you know, round it off with, and I'll hear your opinion on as well, but the Blast format, you know, we changed it. Blast changed it this time around, where the bounty and the whole betting thing, you know, and putting up money kind of went away. But the format, to me, you know, where teams are picking each other, is mad interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the fact that there's actually, you know, certain teams, especially let's consider a world where maybe after the summer break, where all the good teams are showing up, where your playoff is the top 8 teams in the world. You have all your Furious, your G2s, your Navi, Face, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's no bad teams. There's no upset teams. There's no teams for the stand and whatnot. To go into a quarterfinal selection process there where teams get to pick each other, you know, is mad interesting, because that's the only tournament in the world where that is actually happening, where teams are picking their opponents heading in to a quarterfinal or heading into a semifinal based on weaknesses, based on are they good against them in practice, etc. You know, you'd argue that, okay, no one wants to touch Vitality. Of course, they're the best team in the world, but there will be certain teams who think they have a better chance of beating Vitality than beating Falcons. Yeah. And I think to me, that's super, super interesting. So I sincerely hope, and I told Blaster as well, that keep the format, you know, maybe work on some of the surroundings of the tournament and how to make it more engaging. But the fact that we have a tournament where opponents are picking each other or seeding each other, you know, back in the days as well, I think that's mad interesting, because it gives something to talk about. And as you said as well earlier in this episode, you'd be curious to how are the teams actually thinking about each other. Because one thing is us judging them from the outside and thinking, oh, well, they're supposed to be the best or they're supposed to be feared. But, you know, if anything, I want to know it from the teams that are practicing against the teams on a daily basis, if they actually fear playing them in an official tournament. Because even though a team is looking like on paper to be the best team in the world or top 3 team in the world, there will be teams out there who think, well, there's 3 other teams I would rather play than you guys, you know, heading into a tournament. So the fact that we have that circuit and we have a tournament that allows for that, I think is super, super cool. We just have to, you know, I personally would love to see it in the middle of the season. I would love to see it at one of the Blast Open events as well, just so we get a better sense of, okay, now we're a month or a month and a half away from the major. Now the teams are picking each other. Now it's more like, okay, this is a real sense of where they're at right now, and teams are not picking in the dark just after a player break, as an example.
No, the reason why, to me, this is actually like an interesting format is, like I said, it's the most obvious tournament that underdogs should be able to make a run in, because the underdog gets to choose who they play. Remember, in a normal tournament, you get punished as an underdog because the seeding is what makes you then have to play some like top team, but you don't get any say in it. Whereas actually the cool thing here is, as we pointed out in the online portion, I think Foot was really smart to pick Furia. When I looked at the veto, I was like, this is one of the best vetoes you can get into Furia. Like, and this is online, which is where Foot's really good, and they're not going to be nervous. If anything, they're going to have a chance, and they really could have won that game and gotten to the LAN final. So no, if you look at the rest of it, like, this is even what last year, if you remember the first tournament last year, that's why Eternal Fire was so shrewd. So they took like Vitality early, when Vitality had never played a LAN game, and they got the win off against a new roster, and then they took like Na'Vi or whatever it was in the semis. That just matchup made sense in terms of the veto. Like, it's actually cool, because not only do you get to see like a couple of levels here. One, you get to see who thinks they have a good veto into an opponent. And I'm sorry, the reason why, if you're a fan, it's not just about winning. It's about like how you actually play comfort-wise on maps. Vetoes are what makes good series. So you can almost tell before which ones have a chance to be good and which ones are going to be shit. And then more importantly, as you nailed it there, there's also a factor of, we don't actually know beyond what leaks out in interviews who is doing well in scrims. So I know exactly what you mean. Like, there absolutely will be some teams where they'll think to themselves, you know what? Sometimes you play Vitality, maybe like Zewu or Rops has an off game. You have a chance. You know, sometimes we're in these games and we feel like, you know, we can win the right scenario, we can win a 2v2. Maybe in scrims with no pressure, Falcons just 13-2s everyone, and then you just think, well, there's nobody fucking playing them. Like, they've got the most insane confidence over us. Like, they're in our head, and we know that they're going to beat the fuck out of us. So, and they also have no fear against us. They can just pick them up. So I think that's the interesting part. It's a bit like why, if you go way, way, way back, that feature that ESL brought into Pro League years ago, where they let the teams seed each other, it was the same concept. And you notice it was the case that, yes, generally, if you're a top 3 team, you got top 3. If you're top 5, you got top 5. But there would be those odd ones where they would take a team that was like 9th, and maybe they'd be valued like 7th, or vice versa. There'd be a team that was like 6th, and they'd be down at like 10th, because maybe in scrims people think they can handle them. I agree, that's kind of fascinating in itself, and adds an extra narrative to the event. Whereas, like, normally we're just going off like the big, like, how good are teams generally? This is like specifically against that team, how good are you? I think it's unique. I think there's no other tournament in Counter-Strike like that.
No, it's nice. It's nice. And I know you're a geek about the formats as well. I remember, was it you and was it Lerpes back in the day, you know, who vouched for the GSL format? And like, you've always been very much into it. And I've been like lately also getting a lot into it, you know, because you and I both watch regular sports. And I think, you know, football, handball, whatever sport you're watching, like, they have some of the most dog shit formats.
They're really bad, aren't they?
And yes. It's crazy in terms of like competitive integrity and actually making sure the best teams move forward, et cetera, et cetera. So I think if anything, it's nice that we now have, first and foremost, 3 different TOs, you know, with PGL into the mix that can create different formats. And I wish we we never stop exploring that, you know, because I know, you know, Swiss format right now is being frowned upon to be a great format, you know, the DSL format as well, the double elimination bracket that you're running now at IM Krakow as well. You have like different tournaments with different formats. I just hope that we keep innovating on it. You know, I hope that Blast is willing to keep taking chances. I hope the PGL is willing to, you know, different tournaments, do different formats, et cetera, et cetera. Because at the end of the day, personally, and I think that's what makes Counter-Strike so special, is that it's not the same. Like when you have in football, Champions League, right, obviously, you have games at the World Cup. It has to be a format that everyone is well aware of, because it's only every fourth year. Whereas in Counter-Strike, when you have, what is it, 16 to 18 tier one tournaments a year, like they have to have different formats. They have to have different appeals. They have to be different, you know, factors to play into it. Whereas, as you said, Blast, it's a different seeding format. Teams are choosing each other at the GSL group, or sorry, at the Swiss format, at the PGL tournaments. It's all done by seeding, you know, and then the Buchholz system. And then for the ESL Krakow tournament, the play-in, the lead-in, that's a third one. You know, I love the fact that we have so many different formats. Obviously, there's a lot of explaining to do for the casual viewer. We need to make sure that everyone understands what's going on. And I think at the end of the day, that's my job, you know, whenever we're doing the desk segments, the pre-show, et cetera, to simplify it to a point where everyone can follow. But I just love the fact, and I'll happily say this and maybe end on this note, that Counter-Strike, at least as I understand it, having looked at other esports titles, having looked at normal sports, football, and whatever that may be, like we may have the best formats in the entire world in terms of competitive integrity and making it interesting to watch the game actually being played out. And we need to cherish that, nurture that, and continue to work on that.